And we're back with an all-new episode of Keep It Plus, which just launched today.
Oh, with all our... the whole archives are being brought out.
Make sure you subscribe.
Yes, every accent I've ever done, right there, right there, right there for people to see.
How would those be labeled? Like, Australian but sounds Jamaican.
Did you watch any of Disney Plus yet?
No, actually. Though I am obsessed, I think we brought this up before, with the weird old archive stuff that have come up. I mean, how many Herbie movies are there?
Herbie Rides Again.
Yeah.
Herbie Fully Loaded. Herbie Has a Gun This Time.
Herbie is wasted at Woodstock.
It was really just a reminder of how high everyone at Disney was, truly, in the 60s and 70s.
Right, yeah.
What are these movies?
It's the time between Walt dying and Eisner taking over.
Yeah. It was the Wild, Wild West.
We got the Rescuers out of it. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
We got Songs of the South.
That's a little older.
Yeah.
I want to go back and see what all the hullabaloo was about.
Right, because you didn't get to watch a lot of this.
No.
Yeah.
It's not going to come out on Disney Plus, is it?
Literally the one movie that I think won't be.
Yeah.
Songs of the South?
Yeah.
And
no.
Peter Pan with that scene deleted, the one that was really offensive to Native Americans.
Oh, probably.
I hope that's gone.
And probably, you know, not the... blackface Jim Crow unicorn
that in was what?
Fantasia.
Oh no. Yep, deleted scenes.
Yeah.
What was the first Disney movie you ever saw?
Do you remember the Disney original? Like the DCOMs?
Yeah, sure.
I think those were my first. The DCOMs were my first, and then I had to go back, and I think Lion King might have been.
Okay.
Got it.
Yeah.
I mean, did you see Brink?
Is that the ice skating one?
Roller skating.
Rollerblading.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
Oh, yeah.
Like Johnny Tsunami, do you remember that? That was my shit.
Got
yeah,
it.
I'm ready for like a Luck of the Irish, a little smart house moment. The first thing I fired up last night was Chippendale Rescue Rangers.
Oh sure,
yes.
But even when it's from that era when even kids' songs sounded like they were written on cocaine.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you know.
Yes, and I have not watched The Mandalorian yet, which I feel bad as a Star Wars fan, but I watched High School Musical, the musical, the show.
Right.
We did that in high school.
Yeah.
We did that. I loved it.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Well, this show is about a drama teacher at a new school who is putting on High School Musical, the musical.
How
because
meta.
The school where High School Musical was shot at is that school, but they've never done a production of it. And they're the kids who are like, it's very like the Office meets Glee because like they talk to the camera, they're being interviewed.
Is it soft scripted or is it just reality?
It's scripted.
It's totally scripted.
Yeah.
The next thing is going to be a movie about the teacher who
right.
made the play at the school.
True lunacy, but it's a little funny. So.
Oh, it is funny.
Yeah.
I am so baffled by the concept, but I will allow myself the time to sit in front of
it. How much is Disney Plus?
It is $6.99 a month,
okay,
or $69.99 a year.
Doable.
A lot of 6.9s.
I know.
Daring.
Yeah. And it's not like Apple TV where they're like, here, just take it. Please watch it.
Your phone is full of Jennifer Aniston, whether you like it or not.
And plenty of smart water.
Right, yeah. Is she still on that kick? She's still doing smart water?
I feel like she's still doing smart water.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know. Single and thriving.
With the hair that's shaped like parentheses. Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, we have got a very exciting show. We are going to be joined by Hunter the Harris from Twitter and Vulture, but mostly from Twitter.
If Vulture.com had a vulturess, it would be Hunter Harris.
Yeah, she took it over from Cal Buchanan.
That's right. That's right. Yes.
Yes. Slain vulturist Cal Buchanan left, and now Hunter reigns supreme.
And she's the one who teaches us to be sexually excited by things like the new Little Women movie.
Yes. Of course.
And give us a new hot take on Succession every week.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
Important.
I mean, I feel like that's why I love her so much, you know, because, you know, I'm a former vulturess.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that brief period in my life. I feel like everyone becomes a Vulture cast member.
Right. It's like ER.
Yeah. You'll join Vulture in season 27, Aida.
Hopefully. We'll see what spin I can bring to the show.
Also, billionaires are up to no good.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk about them and all their money that I don't have.
Maybe I'll pick a favorite billionaire. There aren't that many to pick from, to be honest.
Yeah.
There's a few.
Yeah.
I've got billionaire friends.
All right.
Yeah. The Billionaire Boys Club, if you will.
And I won't.
My favorite billionaire is the dead Koch brother.
Oh, because he can't do no more harm.
Yeah, because he's done.
Yeah.
All right. And then we're going to talk about poor little Aubrey getting booed off stage at Camp Lagna.
It's a sad thing.
To be honest, this still needs to be explained to me more. We'll get into it. Okay.
All right. We will get into it.
You'll learn.
We'll be right back. Last week was an overall bad look for Billionaire.
Shocking. They're usually so on point image-wise.
Rich boys Michael Bloomberg, Jamie Dimon, and Bill Gates have made it very clear that they do not want a Warren presidency. Them or Pete Buttigieg.
That's right.
Apparently.
Meanwhile, my therapist has recommended a Warren presidency for me, so I need it personally.
4 out of 5 therapists recommend a Warren presidency. The others are busy reading Triggered. all these billionaires are upset because they're scared of losing millions of their billions of dollars. And some of them, like Bloomberg, have even decided that they want to start running for president now.
It really does feel like the way your musical theater major friend thinks you want to hear them sing Defying Gravity at whatever bar you go to, that billionaires now run for president. Should I? Oh, please stop me.
Don't make me run.
Jenna Maroney, yes.
No one ever wants to hear anyone sing Defying Gravity, by the way.
I sure don't. No.
Yeah. I mean, Idina Menzel doesn't even want to sing it.
Nor does her body.
The first billionaire who was causing trouble was J.P. Morgan Chase CEO, so we know he's a good person.
Right.
Jamie Dimon, who has a net worth of $1.6
billion. Poor in comparison.
Right, right. Insignificant.
Right, like, look how much Bill Gates has. $107 billion. Okay, Jamie, you're a broke bitch.
Go home.
Senator Warren vilifies successful people. And in an interview with CBS, he clarified, saying, "What I was commenting on is that anything that vilifies people, I just don't like. I think, you know, most people are good. Not all of them. I think you should vilify Nazis. But you shouldn't vilify people who worked hard to accomplish things. And so my comment is, I think it's American society. We're just attacking each other all the time."
That's so down to earth and relatable, and I'm glad he said it because it really put everything into perspective. My God, because Nazis came into vogue basically again a couple years ago, now we can just compare anything to them. It's like, it's not as bad. Well, it's not Nazis.
He sounds like such a child. He's like, we're attacking each other all the time. What are you talking about? And why do they have the strongest opinions about how we see them when they know the wrong they've done? Like, think about Nazis, and then think about all the families that J.P. Morgan has displaced as a bank. Maybe worse than the Nazis.
It's probably four to six families. My God.
Actually, what's wilder than billionaires jumping to defend themselves, which, of course, you know, they're reacting, just like that Starbucks billionaire who was running for president for 5 seconds.
Howie Schultz?
Yes, yes. Remember him? We made him sad.
That's right, yeah.
We made him sad.
Venti
and he dropped
sad.
Out.
Venti sad.
Are the people online who have fixed it upon themselves to defend them? Like, people leaving their, like, 9-to-5 job to go and tweet defenses of billionaires.
From their Android phone.
Yeah.
You know? But why are you defending money that's not in your pockets? I don't understand.
Yeah. We also have Bill Gates. He is the person that I feel like most people have defended. He addressed his concern over Warren's wealth tax in an onstage interview with the New York Times, where he said that he had paid over $10 billion in taxes in the past, and he would be fine if he had to pay $20 billion. But, you know, when you say I should pay $100 billion, okay, then I'm starting to do a little math about what I have left over. Sorry, I'm just kidding. So you really want the incentive system to be there, and you can go a long ways without threatening that.
Did you see the TikTok that was trying to break down his wealth and what he could buy? there was this TikTok
that took his
wealth, and it showed that he could buy literally the whole NFL. He could buy 32 teams in the NFL and still have billions and billions of dollars left over. Him playing this, doing this weird calculus, or even flaunting the fact that even if he lost $100 billion, he'd still have $7 billion left, which is so much money.
$70 billion, yes, right.
A lot of this ends up being people who are rich, and obviously, you know, I love philanthropy.
Oh, it's what you do.
It's me daily.
The amount that you give, talent-wise.
Yes. Okay.
I mean, I don't know who you give it to. I've not seen it, but I'm sure they're loving it.
I am Lily Vanderwoodson, okay? Constantly philanthropizing.
Okay.
But they also do just dumb things as rich people, right? You know, it was like recently it was like Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation collaborated to develop like gene-based HIV treatment. And it's like, cool. You have your money to do that. Like, why don't you put your money into like actual like HIV and AIDS prevention?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
like making things like PrEP and Truvada like free for everyone in the U.S., around the globe. You know, like stuff that's actually helpful. I feel like whenever we talk about rich people who are like, oh, they donate so much money and they do so much to help people, it's always some weird foundation that never seems to actually help people.
I think about being a billionaire, period. I mean, like, in the back of my head all the time, I think we're all, I mean, we are people who live in L.A. and work in entertainment, but I feel like most people, a part of you is always operating under the assumption that you want to be successful, and then, like, there's a chance that you'll be rich, and then you'll be whatever. Like, in some far-off universe, a billionaire like these people. Then I think about it consciously. The idea of a billionaire feels so, and I think this is exactly right, 80s to me.
Mm-hmm.
It seems so weird to be a billionaire now. It's like when you see a Lamborghini go down the street. Like,
yeah.
Who is that for? Why is it making so much noise?
Mm-hmm.
Why did we put so much whatever into this thing? It's disgusting. And the only person who should be able to drive it is Sharon Gregg Allman in the 70s. You know what I'm saying? But it's just, I can't even grapple with the ethics of being a billionaire when I think being one is so shocking.
Yes. I think that for a large swath of Americans, we are raised to think that we can achieve wealth, you know. And it's so many people vote, particularly for Republicans, because they are under this notion that, you know, you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You know,
right.
Like, you could be minutes away from, like, owning a company or being an entrepreneur, and you could make billions. And so much of the reactionary defense of billionaires is from people who, somewhere in the back of their minds, they assume, I could become a billionaire.
Right.
You know? And
through trying hard and being good or something.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you bring up such a perfect point of us, you know, as TV writers, people working in the industry, and you look at people like a Shonda Rhimes, you know, like a Ryan Murphy, you think, oh, I want some of that money. What they have, even they are millionaires.
Right, right.
They're not billionaires, you know? Even that wealth is not anywhere close to, like, what fucking Jamie Dimon has, you know?
Yeah, right, right, right.
And so it is just astronomical thinking about wanting to be a person who cares about what happens to people in this world and thinking that you should have $100 billion hoarded somewhere?
Yeah.
It's very
morally
strange.
I think morally that's where the divide is. Someone like me, who didn't come from wealth, who never has really had aspirations of having billions of dollars, I think it's morally repugnant to even own that much money, to have that much money at all, to have it sitting in a trust somewhere, to have it in an offshore account, to be not using it to help others. So the idea, God, even like anywhere over $100 million feels like you've done, what are you doing? What are you doing with that money?
Right.
What's that for exactly?
Yeah, I mean, $20 million, I mean, you're not going to do anything with it.
Yeah,
you know?
That's just
Connor Roy said, you know, like, you'll waste your life with $20 million, but $100 million, you're good.
That's money.
Who are the billionaires we trust then? I mean, obviously Oprah comes to mind, but that's not my brand really.
Yeah.
Like Jessica Alba, is she a billionaire? I think she's one of the 40 richest women in America.
Mm.
How do we feel about Beyonce?
Is she a billionaire?
I think she just hit billionaire status.
I mean, like, she may as well be compared to everybody else, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think her and Jay-Z, when they put their Wonder Twin rings together, are at least billionaires.
Beyonce is the rare case of somebody where the music keeps getting better, but I keep kind of knowing her less.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering how she will maintain that as the years go by. But I'm always fascinated by her. And I think she does remain one step ahead of people. She always puts out something that you're not quite expecting.
Richie Rich.
Oh, Richie Rich? I was sure.
Yeah.
In the Macaulay Culkin movie, when he runs along Mount Rushmore at the end, and it's like North by Northwest, I respected.
Richie Rich, I love.
Which I've seen.
Him. Okay,
and love.
Yes.
And
okay.
Love.
Turn up.
Exactly, yes.
We are due for a Richie Rich reboot.
Let's see. Oh, who would play? Timothy Chalamet with like blonde hair.
Oh, that'd be cute.
Yeah, and like a gritty Richie Rich reboot. Like he's now
Cyberpunk
a,
Richie
now
Rich.
He's like a twink, and he's. You know, has his aging billions.
You would think there would be like a Riverdale-esque TV show based on Richie Rich. Also, I just want to remind everybody that it is crazy we have a sexy show based on the Archie comics. I just want to keep reminding people. I know it's Ira's thing, and we've accepted it. It is very strange. With his Clairol orange hair.
I don't think the culture would receive a Richie Rich reboot right now, especially in the thrush of all this billionaire stuff. It'd be like, ugh.
Maybe he's overcome with guilt about it, though. White guilt, always popular among the teens.
Well, I wonder about that, though, because is that why we like a show like Succession? Because we think that they are secretly miserable, and because it's also dark and funny? Because we're not in the era where we're watching, like, a dynasty. Mm-hmm. Like, the CW's dynasty isn't that popular.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're past the era of lavish wealth on TV where you're like, oh, that's aspirational, right?
I can't tell if Succession's success is an exception to the rule or the rule. I mean, I guess people love corruption.
Yeah.
And I guess people love diplomacy and, you know, man-to-man sort of, like, business-like combat. But at the same time, it does feel weirdly out of step to like I guess they would just have to be sort of miserable deep down.
Yeah, I think we'd like to see that in that show the family's happiness is dismantled. You see that there's the father may not even truly love the kids in the way that you would expect a father to love children. So I think that feeds the notions that we already have about billionaires and about how callous they are. So I think that's why Succession does well.
It's like the fall of the House of Atreus.
Sure.
But it is also just because the show is good and also because of television critics, too. I mean, if I'm being honest, you know, Succession doesn't get Big Bang Theory ratings. You know, it's not a worldwide or even, like, nationwide phenomenon.
Yeah.
It's a lot in the way that Mad Men was a show that there was an article that I read somewhere. It was about how Mad Men was more of a cultural phenomenon than it was a ratings success.
Oh, sure.
In the sense that all of us could reference Mad Men and Banana Republic had Mad Men clothes, and everything was inspired by Mad Men, et cetera, but that didn't translate with the amount of people who actually watched Mad Men.
It's like 30
on
Rock.
AMC. Yeah.
The amount of I already referenced Jenna Maroney, but we all know all the jokes from that show, but that's about the people who are in this room and not so much about people who are in the middle of the country or whatever.
Yeah.
So I wonder if these billionaires... Well, I wonder if, they're definitely not voting for Warren, I can tell you that. But I wonder if Warren is willing to have conversations with them about this at all. You know, I mean, she's someone that it looks bad for her to even sit down with billionaires. So I wonder what.
But also, her vibe is kind of the teacher who stays after class to explain the problem you still didn't get.
Very true. Mm-hmm.
So I feel like if, from the teacher perspective, it could be kind of rad.
Maybe she just needs to put on a leather jacket, play some Coolio.
Oh, yeah.
And then she can help Bill Gates.
Are you Mr. Turner? Is she talking about Mr. Turner from Boy Meets World? That's what I pictured.
I was talking about Michelle Pfeiffer in Dangerous Minds.
Oh, they both wore leather coats. It was a fair mistake.
Or Annie Potts in Dangerous Minds, the TV show.
Which I never saw.
Well...
Remember how Annie Potts starred in a huge blockbuster this year? Toy Story 4?
Yeah.
Mr. Feeny.
Yes.
Warren has Mr. Feeny vibes.
Yes, quite.
Exactly.
I do constantly feel like she is popping over America's fence. And saying, hey, neighbor.
Wisdom. Yes.
Here to remind us.
Hey, neighbor.
You know what's crazy? That Mr. Feeny still with us. He is in his 90s.
Yeah.
You know what? I love that for him.
I know. Yeah. Me too.
I love that life for him. I love that for him.
Whereas, you know, Topanga died in a boat crash in 1943.
That's not true. Danielle Fishel is very much with us.
If you could see how far my jaw had dropped the whole time you were saying that, I really believed that she was dead.
Until I got to 1943.
Until you got to 1943. Oh, my goodness.
Last
night. Quickly, I just want to say about her... Remember how at the beginning of that show she was like a weird hippie, and by the end she was the most normal person who ever lived? Like, they couldn't commit to who she was as a character.
She's all vetted her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
She literally became a sexy bombshell on the show.
Yeah.
When in the first season she was definitely
kooky.
Shailene Woodley.
But yeah. When you were 13 or 14, didn't you all have a phase that you went through that you endured? Like, mine was a punk, really, really punk phase.
Oh, okay. Is true. That said, I mean, she's named
listening
Topanga.
To Eminem. That was my thing.
That was it?
She's named Topanga because she had hippie parents.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Anyway, it's funny that she became so down to earth.
Growth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of eating the earth.
I did read a New York Times op-ed by Michael Tomsky, who actually did bring up the fact that it might not actually be democratic for a wealth tax the way Warren is talking
about
it.
Okay, but it would be fun.
It would be fun, you know? And it also brings into mind the question of whether we want people who come up with grand ideas that could maybe help everybody, or whether we want to keep going with like what's practical, like an income tax.
Mm. Well, somebody solve it who works for this network. It's not going to be me.
It certainly won't
be. I solve Jack Kay's next project. Okay? Should be a whodunit.
Anyway, I think those are the only billionaires we like.
Yeah. Do I forget any? I mean, like George Lucas. I think he's a billionaire. Mm. I think he's actually, according to a 2017 Forbes listing, is richer than Steven Spielberg. Does that surprise you?
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
These wars of stars keep continuing.
Steven Spielberg spent all his money building dinosaurs.
That's true.
They're just hanging out in his backyard.
Oh, you're running the books on the dinosaurs? Like, ooh, that Diplodocus was expensive.
I guess Elon Musk is certainly a billionaire.
Right.
Is he?
Elon.
I don't believe anything that man says.
I don't know, man.
I was in a self-driving Tesla for the first time recently. Guys, it's really crazy. That's
it
made me feel like somebody seeing IMAX for the first time in their 80s. I was like, wow, what a whole new world.
A Tesla?
Yeah, being, yeah.
I love them.
I mean, I don't know that I love them. I fear them and respect that they feel like they are from a Marty McFly universe.
I would love one.
Yeah, I would love one too. Sometimes you want a little wealth, a little class. A little power.
It's the level of ostentatious I'll do. I won't do the Lamborghini, but I'll do the Tesla.
Got it. Now I'm thinking about that. Okay.
You'd do it.
All right.
Yeah. Like, what's the level of, like, wild flash that you would accept in your life?
You ever seen the Gossip Folks video with Ludacris?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know he wears that alligator suit? That's about it for me.
That's it?
Yeah.
I think.
And then carrying my Oscar everywhere if I get one.
I'm doing Britney VMA's Snake Around My Neck.
Oh, okay.
That's what I would do. I guess you don't need that much money to do that. That's just...
Right. You can just be walking down La Brea. Yeah.
Personality choice. I've seen people walk down La Brea with snakes around their neck.
I think there's a lot of creepy connotations because Michael Jackson, but I think amusement park.
Ooh.
Oh, sure. Themed around you?
Or
themed
Travis
around...
Scott.
What would it be themed
around? Ireland.
On?
Ireland.
It just sounds awful. I mean, why? What would that be? You can't have a meme-themed roller coaster.
Can't I?
Okay, well, I shouldn't have suggested it.
Step right up and ride the...
Are you going to do all the voicings for all the rides?
Probably.
In different accents?
Yeah.
Step right up and ride this dated Whitney gif or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's Joan Collins waving papers in the air. The ride.
Step over here for the everybody's been doing emails. When we're back, we'll be joined by Hunter Harris.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
As poet laureate Noah Centineo once said at the E's People Choice Awards,
I just want to say thank you, everyone at home. You are the reason I'm on this stage. You are the reason I get to do what I am passionate about. You are the reason that I have a platform that I can help hopefully make the world a bit of a better place. And before I go, I just want to say it matters not what you've done, but what you do with what you've done for others.
He was talking about Hunter Harris. Hunter Harris, staff writer at Vulture and tweeter extraordinaire, has come to Keep It, finally. Finally, we've lured you here.
Oh my gosh.
Hunter, I have so many questions about you.
Okay.
You just came into my life like a burst of fresh air on Twitter. Right when I got sick of using it, and I was like, oh my God, thank God there are still people who are having fun on this website who work at Vulture, where I used to work.
I know, we didn't overlap.
No, I was there for a hot minute.
I did American Idol recaps of Vulture for a while. That's some intrepid work, by the way. I deserve more props.
You are in Los Angeles because you hosted a screening of A Star Is Born.
Yeah, a little indie movie called A Star Is Born. One day I'm going to get like a cease and desist. Like Bradley Cooper will be like, I'm begging you to come up with something else. And I'll say, no, I can't do that. I love A Star Is Born so much.
I want to
tell
why.
Me about that. I mean, it's not that I don't love it, but there's like a religious devotion to this movie.
I saw a tweet where you said you counted how many times the F word was said, and I was like, well, how many?
That was it. That I just think, okay, I, first of all, did not expect to like this movie as much as I did. And I remember going to the screening in New York last September, October, and it's like 3 minutes into the movie, I was like, oh, I'm trapped. Like, Bradley Cooper and the beard and the tan has like trapped me. What is happening here? I thought he was, and someone, which is funny, it's like he's an actor that I've never really thought about that much, so I was really surprised at myself. And then as the movie
He has such a weird career. Where
right. Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember him mostly from Alias.
Right.
Oh my gosh, back in the Dizzy.
Yes, and then I remember his comedic acting. And
that's where I saw him. Era. To me, he was only a comedic actor, so to see him doing drama or serious stuff was so off-kilter.
No, in like 2013, he's like, what if I was nominated for 8 Oscars?
Yeah.
Right. And we all were just like, okay, fine.
Okay.
And then remember he had that brief period where conservatives were in love with him because he was
an American Sniper.
Yeah. Right. But then they realized he wasn't a conservative and were like,
he was caping.
Fuck you. Right. So you got pulled in, just like Allie.
Really, just like Allie. We both have punch cops and cop bars. I think it's like A Star Is Born is such a big movie. It's like lots of big feelings. It wears its heart on its sleeve, and I'm usually so cynical that I just loved that this is like a movie literally about making art, falling in love, you know, all like the industry, of course, but it's just so like, I don't know. When was the last time I went to a movie and I was like, I'm feeling every emotion all at once right now? Mm-hmm. And because I feel like a lot of movies that we see are more understated, which I do appreciate. And like that's sort of the narrative that I like better. But I just felt so many things. I was like, oh my gosh, like I love this. And then I just wrote everything I could. Like I counted how many times they said the F word because I simply had to know. I counted how many times Dave Chappelle said bro, which was 5 in one scene is pretty shocking. It was like a joke that I should host a Star Is Born screening for Vulture Festival that just became more and more real. And then it like sold out and I was like, I hope you all know that this movie is streaming on HBO at present. It's actually so easy for you to sit in your home and watch it without me talking through it.
I want tips though. Like, how do you host a screening of a film where obviously, I guess there was audience participation.
Listen, I ran into 3 of my bosses before the screening, and I was like, if you have any ideas, like, literally give them to me. I have no plan. I am very persnickety. I don't like when people talk through movies because I think it's so annoying, and I'm like, I want to, like, watch the movie. So I was like, I said some stuff in the beginning,
And then I was like, I'll just like pop in at little parts that I feel like are like kind of cool just to know, like that Bradley Cooper's real ear doctor had like a cameo, that he based his voice on Sam Elliott, obviously, like scenes that were filmed at the Roosevelt where the screening was. I like pointed that out. And then our mutual friend Kyle Buchanan texted me, no more trivia. We're done with trivia. I was like, thank you, audience feedback. But yeah, so I was just like, you know, mostly I was just gasping a lot because it's been a long time since I've seen it. And I was like, wow, Lady Gaga is a vocalist. Mm-hmm. Like, she can do everything. It's like, she's so good in this movie.
But release an album.
Right.
It's so pleasurable to read your interviews with people, too. What's been the most satisfying Q&A you've done recently where, like, somebody, you know, proved they got it, so to speak?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think, okay. It was funny. Okay, I'm looking at your shirt, Ira, and which is from Clueless. Mm-hmm. And I just did an interview with Charlie Puth last week.
Oh,
and
you know that we are Puth Hive, unfortunately.
I just think he's like a genius. Right. Like he has perfect pitch. Like that's the thing. But I think that he understands music in a way that, and understands pop music specifically in a way that I think is really interesting. And so a lot of our interview was just like him talking to me about like what he likes hearing, what he doesn't like hearing as a producer. But there was a point when we started talking about his personal life and he was like, I don't even know how this came up really, but he was like trying to explain something to me by explaining a scene from Clueless. Mm-hmm. And then he takes out his phone and he's like explaining to me like verbally. And I'm like, yeah, sure. Like I've seen Clueless when I was like, you know, sixth grade, whatever. Like I like it, but it's like been a minute since I've seen it. And he's like, okay, you're not getting it. Takes out his phone, plays the scene. And then he's like, oh, wait, you're not hearing it. And then, like, turns up his volume, plays it, like, runs it back. Plays
which
the scene? Again, the last scene with Paul Rudd and Alicia Silverstone stairs. Mm-hmm. When he's like, you know, like, you're caring and compassionate and, like, you're beautiful. And then she's like, you think I'm beautiful? And Charlie Puth was like, you didn't hear it. Like, come on, let's watch it again.
What was he trying to get to resonate with you in that moment?
Just about, like, I don't know. It's about relationships and like what he's looking for in a partner, basically. Mm-hmm. That he would love to like be with a woman who's like that, who's so caring, who can see things about him that, you know, maybe other people can't or that he can't see about himself, which I think is like super relatable. But I did think it was funny that he was like,
oh, okay. He's the Cher.
Yeah.
I get it. Okay. Yes. Got it.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. That's important to clarify.
Okay. Yes. Well, I mean,
wow,
Charlie
now
Puth,
I really relate
Charlie
to him.
Charlie Puth is always
that's
wearing
beautiful.
Alaya. So I get it. That is an interesting way into pop culture, too, you know, because yeah. I think that movie, Clueless, probably has a lot in common with something like A Star Is Born, you
yeah.
know? And you were talking before about how much you love A Star Is Born because it's like it's so splashy and it's fun and it feels like a movie. And
I think capital we're all, M movie.
Right. And we're all movie people. And I feel like, do you feel like that is something we want to see more, or does it only need to happen sometimes in cinema? Because I would rather sit and watch, like, they know I love, like, Cirque melodramas.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I would rather watch, like, some big
splashy,
people
guileless.
Are having fun on film, you know, than, I don't know, 40 hours about Irish people. Is that how long that movie is? Marty, I'm still going to see it.
No, I do. I think I come from, like, my aunt, like, I watched a lot of movies with her, and she was so into, like, The Imitation of Life, like, big melodramas. And it's, like, that is, I just love it. I love movies that are events. And I think part of the thing with A Star Is Born is that, and in a lot of ways Clueless, too, like, movies that are at this scale, sort of, is that the scale isn't always, like, budget or talent or whatever. It's that it's so much fun to talk about these movies. It's so much fun to talk about, like, scenes from Clueless, the costumes, like, just the lush world building that is, like, Beverly Hills, is that where they live? Mm-hmm. And that's becoming more rare.
Do you know what's fun this Oscar season, though, is I do think there was a rare movie that kind of straddles both of those worlds, which is Parasite, which is a kind of gigantic cinematic thing. But also, I mean, the message of it, the messaging of it is so rad and something you really want to discuss.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
I'm hoping there's more of that merging in the future where it's just like
I mean,
big,
that Pain and Glory, too.
Yeah,
you
Pain
know?
And Glory. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's splashy. It's fun. But it's also very heartfelt and sentimental.
Right, right, yeah. right.
As far as being a staff writer for Vulture, I mean, you going ahead and picking what topics you want to talk about and what movies and shows you want to discuss that week or however often you write. Do you ever find yourself, like, because you said that you used to like movies a lot when you were younger, too. Mm-hmm. What if you could pick a movie that came out when you were younger that you wish you could report on now?
Oh,
like it was,
my gosh.
Like it just got released. Everyone was talking about it.
That is so funny. I think about this all the time. Like, yeah, what I would have written about movies that I loved growing up. I loved Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one. Like, would watch it with the director's commentary because I was just 8 years old and nuts out of my mind.
It's still iconic.
It is hilarious.
I remember going to see Pirates of the Caribbean and being absolutely shocked at how much fun it was and how much I laughed during it.
Yes.
And that was completely gone from the sequels.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Totally. No. It had such a weird sensibility where it's like, it totally was a good movie for like kids, but it was also like, it was full of these crazy double entendres that I was like, oh, this would be so great. Also a movie that we were just talking about, Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yeah.
Like, what a narrative for a movie. It's just, and I do think that was also Brad Pitt at his most attractive.
I wish, like,
now I'm thinking
internet,
about that.
Yeah.
Internet sort of like even Twitter culture was sort of around then because
we would have eaten good for days.
Oh my god, full.
First of all, I am full Angelina Hive.
Yes,
so
really.
I would have.
I'm a Jennifer Aniston.
I would have been tweeting Jen memes. I would be getting dragged on Twitter.
Wow. My mom is still bitter about the Angelina and the Jennifer situation.
Your mom was standing Jennifer Aniston.
My
like
mom
that?
Was such a Jennifer Aniston stand. She's like, wow, she stole. Like, she's still very passionate about it.
She's got her smart water.
And the Aveeno? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And the morning show.
And morning show.
Yeah.
It's just the rare tabloid story where it was kind of teased the insanity of what became an affair. And then it turned out to be true.
Yeah.
And then it turned out we got to know about it. You know what I mean? It's so rare that, you know, like something could live up to an Inquirer-sized headline. You know?
Right. It wasn't a flop like that. Marion Cotillard affair that was supposed to have happened.
Like,
with Brad
I was
Pitt.
Promised that. And what do I have? Nothing.
Right.
I have Allied, which I didn't see. Okay,
I know.
Thanks.
I went and saw it for that reason. It almost was marketting for that reason.
It felt like they were trying to lure us to see Allied with the promise of, oh, this steamy affair. And I was like, oh, that's how the Nazis got people. So you will not get me to see your Nazi movie.
And Ally, by the way, turned out to be what, like an episode of Cold Case? What was that movie?
What are you very excited about going into Oscar season? Like, what should we be caping for? What don't the girls know about?
Because you're Chalamet universe, right?
Yeah, I am. But I don't think he has anything big. I mean, the king, but, you know.
Have you seen Little Women yet?
No, not yet. I'm seeing it next week.
He slays.
Hunter and I have been kept from Little Women screening.
Oh, wow.
As we've documented on Twitter.
How cheap will it be? Who am I upset?
Literally every white person has seen Little Women.
It's like we're really like pushing day 10,000 of me not having seen Little Women, and it just really makes no sense to me. But no, I'm so excited for Little Women. That's the only thing that I'm really looking forward to seeing that I haven't seen yet.
I'm seeing Knives Out this week, and I cannot wait.
Did love it. I thought it was so fun.
He's one of my favorite directors.
I was just reading the profile of him that we just published on Vulture, and it was really interesting because he was talking about like the Star Wars backlash and how basically he's like, the girls are mad, and what am I going to do about it? Like, getting mad at him for ruining their childhoods or whatever? Enough.
And I love him.
Rian Johnson, for the
yes,
record.
Rian Johnson. Yes. I love him, too, because that is that perfect mix of the Scorsese thing, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've enjoyed your takes on the Scorsese thing because you've just been tweeting jokes. Because that's the only way I feel like you can interact with film Twitter, just like some jokes.
Because
if you try and put an actual, like, thought, then you will get 50 responses in an hour from people who didn't actually read your tweet and just want to argue about something. But I feel like Rian Johnson comes from that era of where Marty was talking about if he was younger, like he would have loved like Marvel movies and stuff and like wanted to do that stuff, right? I feel like Rian Johnson makes such good movies, but also he grew up in the era where he was like, yeah, I want to make a fucking Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's good.
I mean, Last Jedi is one of my, I think it is my favorite Star Wars movie.
I think it's my second after Empire. But,
oh, that makes sense.
Wait, so
I love Adam Driver oiled up in that movie. It's like, Thank you.
Speaking of him, have you seen Marriage Story yet?
Yes, I have.
He really is spectacular in it.
I mean, he's bigger than my whole life. Like, I love him in this movie. I think he's so good. And it's also like, did you cry?
No, I'm not really prone to cry in a movie, strangely.
Yeah. I didn't cry either, but I almost liked it. Like, I just had a sense of general melancholy.
Yeah.
That was, like, very affecting.
It felt like, I mean, the poster looks like this, but it feels like a movie like Kramer versus Kramer. We were talking about Ellen Burstyn earlier, Twice in a Lifetime. These, like, movies where there's a malaise, just a feeling in the air around, like, the dissolution of a family that is really well captured.
Yeah.
You know?
I've had a lot of people text me and be like, oh, you need to see Marriage Story. You're going to love it. And I'm like, is it because I don't have a father?
that's why they told you that.
Well... All my friends have come from divorces who've texted me this. So I'm like, is this like our movie? I'm very interested in seeing a Marriage Story, but it's also, I feel like I'm ready for no more of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, I don't know, the dissolution of white couples on TV. I don't know, unless it's Mary Tyler Moore.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
You know, like, what are we still doing?
Ordinary People Hive.
You know?
One second, just to back up, because, so I really want to know, what should we be looking at going into the Oscars?
Oh, okay. So, I think Marriage Story is like, has a lot of opportunities to get lots of nominations, because it is so good, and there's so much of this movie to talk about. My favorite movie this year is Uncut Gems, the Safdie Brothers movie. It is, like, truly out of its mind.
You are Uncut Gems Hive.
Listen, my gems, baby, they can't be cut. They won't be cut.
This is notably Adam Sandler's new drama.
His new joint.
Yes.
Yes.
Wait, has anyone seen it?
I have not seen it, no.
I'm seeing it soon.
I can't remember the last time I watched a movie that I was, like, so visibly tense. Mm-hmm. And it was only sort of exacerbated by the fact that, like, so in the movie, In the movie, it's about Adam Sandler, who's, like, a Diamond District, like, jewelry salesman. He has this shop. And he finds this, like, Ethiopian gem, which is uncut. And he has this sort of scheme to, like, flip it and auction it off and get more money. And so it's just, like, constantly him getting himself into trouble. Like, he goes from one scheme to the next scheme to the next, and they're all just, like, sort of stupid. Mm-hmm. Like, none of them really ever will work or make sense because it's just messy. But in the movie, the way that they, like, layer just drama in this man's life, it's like he's on the phone with one person, getting on the phone with another person. There's, like, people banging at the door trying to get into the jewelry shop. It's, like, incredibly tense to watch. And as I was watching it at TIFF, some guy next to me had, like, dropped his phone and was, like, crawling around on the floor trying to find the phone. And I'm like, you need to literally calm down. Like, I cannot take this right now. This is like, it's like 4DX. Is that
their movies are very tense.
Yes, yes.
I feel like there is a tendency once a decade or so to reward somebody who has a very successful dramatic turn that you don't expect one from. You know?
But we get those, I feel like, every 5 years or so from Adam Sandler.
True.
You know, so there's precedent for the awards being like, oh, you're doing this again.
Right.
Let's give you something. You know, instead of those Netflix movies that you make every week.
Right. Oh my God. They're still coming out.
Like the vacation movies, right? Where he just, like, has an excuse to go somewhere and hang out.
Yes. Right. He's like, I need to be with Kevin James for 9 days somewhere. Yeah. Is what the contract says.
I guess lastly, you know, like, we know you a lot from Twitter too.
Yes.
How do you craft these tweets, which are wild. I feel like you're part of the new guard, you know?
I feel old
looking at the tweets. I'm like, I'm still trying to keep up.
I wish I knew, but sometimes I will, like, see my, like, sometimes people, like, retweet stuff I tweeted a long time ago. And by long, I mean, like, a couple months ago. And I'm like, what was she thinking? Like, truly, what was I going through? Even the other night, I was like, what did I say? I said, I would redacted Sam Elliott redacted. And I was like, oh, I mean, suck dry. And it's like, what was I thinking? No, it's my mom follows me on Twitter, and she, for the most part, is only like, what does this mean? And it's like something that is, I don't know, like a moment most pleasing to me in my career. She's like, what does that mean? And it's like, oh, I have to, like, okay, let's sit down and have story time. So Mariah Carey, no, Whitney Houston.
It was so funny seeing, it was so funny hearing Jesse from Vulture talk about that phrase when he was on La Culturistas.
Yeah.
And they were talking about your Twitter with Matt Rogers, Bowen Gang. And it was, I was wondering, I was like, does he know where a moment most pleasing comes from? Because Bowen and Matt clearly did.
Yes.
And I feel like that's such a weird part of Twitter now, too, where you're not even just constructing a joke. You're also constructing a joke by mixing in a phrase and meme that we
the
all already know.
The levels of irony.
Right.
The levels of irony in Twitter. Like, it's such an in-group. You have to understand 17 different facets of what meme culture is, because somebody's going to have, like, one ultimate meme, you know?
My brain is mush.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't exist.
Oh, my goodness.
I feel like it would be trying to layer continuity of 30 Rock via just the jokes. Unlike
if you
actually made a list of who I think is doing what the other girl should be doing, it's probably 500 people, and all of them probably shouldn't be doing it.
My mom basically follows me, Ira, and Aida, I think.
Oh, no.
And, oh, my gosh.
Lovely.
Actually, I haven't gotten a report back on your tweets
yet.
But,
questionable.
Want to talk wild for a moment.
So questionable.
But my mom will, like, quote Ira's tweets. I'm like, Mom, you have to go back to like a puzzle piece that has long been lost. Like this, there's a lot to explain.
It's such an ephemeral place.
Yeah,
Hunter, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, thank you for having me.
Yes, people need to follow you too.
Yeah,
Hunter,
if you haven't taken that from this conversation, oh my God.
At Hunter Y. Harris.
Yes,
do
that's
it.
Me.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This weekend was the 8th annual Camp Flogna Carnival, the LA-based music festival founded by Tyler, the Creator. After being promised a surprise set, a lot of attendees who were very certain, for some reason, that Frank Ocean was going to leave his home and come to LA and perform for them a little show, they were sorely mistaken, because instead, they got Drake. And they were not happy about it.
Okay, this needs to be explained
to
me.
Happened.
Why did they think it was Frank Ocean? What was there, like an anagram that they misspelled? What happened in the tease for this?
It was like murder by numbers. Yeah. Sandra Bullock helped them figure it out. So every year, Camp Flogna always does a surprise guest. I was there this year. I've been there before. And usually the final headliner on Sunday night is someone who you have no idea who it is.
Mm-hmm.
Before, it was like Earl Sweatshirt one year. I'm blanking on who else before. But we all knew that there was going to be a surprise headliner, and there were question marks on the lineup. And what's interesting is I would put the blame for this on a lot of different people. I think it was asinine for people to assume that Frank Ocean was going to be there in the first place, because Frank Ocean ain't doing shit.
I still don't understand why they thought they had solved it. Yeah.
Okay, I mean, he already had two flop prep plus parties.
Yeah,
so
maybe they thought that it would be him because he had just released two songs. He's in the camp of like Tyler, the Creator's people and mm-hmm. Earl Sweatshirt's people. Mm-hmm. They used to be in a group together called Odd Future when they were younger.
They don't make music together anymore. They really don't even feature on each other's songs anymore.
And that's the thing, too. It is a lot of assumptions about how close Frank and Tyler are.
Yeah.
Which I don't think we have any knowledge of at this point, because they don't collab together.
Mm-hmm. And they used to explicitly talk about, like, Tyler used to crash on my couch, Frank used to crash on my couch. Like, they were close 10 years ago mm-hmm. when they were talking about it, when they were very, very young. But now those children had no reason to expect Frank Ocean to come.
Right. And there were weird Reddit-esque rumors and just sort of, like, fervor of people mm-hmm. really trying to piece things together, like, oh, after FKA Twigs performed, who was fucking amazing, by the
yeah,
way.
I bet.
I just listened to that album.
She serves.
It's a little baffling to me, but all right, we can talk about that another time.
We will.
All right. I don't think it's for you.
Okay.
It better be good baffling.
Yeah.
Okay. Go listen to Amy Mann and a used curiosity shop.
Oh my God. Coming down on my taste.
But after she performed, apparently a Frank Ocean song played on just like the speaker system, blaring music into the festival, and so it was like, oh, that's a clue.
That should have been an anti-clue. If anything, I think that should have de-escalated what they thought. Because why would an artist who's about to go on stage play a track that he's going to perform?
Yeah,
that makes no sense to me.
Yeah, so
these are some amateur detectives, if I do say so myself.
So this is why I would also lay some blame on Tyler. Because mm-hmm. usually there is a logo up there on the stage with question marks, and then it says the name of the person who's performing, and they come out.
Mm-hmm.
This year, he was teasing Drake. It was more he came out and said, you guys mind if I bring a friend out? Mm-hmm. And then he brought out ASAP, you know, fresh from prison.
Still nibbling on Swedish Fish.
Right. Who did a couple songs.
Yeah.
Then he was like, you guys mind if I bring another friend out?
Mm-hmm.
Then Lil Uzi Vert came out. And that was fun. Did a couple songs. Then he was like, you guys mind if I bring another friend out? And like at this point, people are like, is he teasing this for Frank?
Mm-hmm.
And Drake came out. Granted, I'd heard that Drake was going to be the secret performer all day. And
you knew.
Yeah, so some people knew. So I was ready because I love Drake.
Yeah.
You know, he always puts on a fun show. And Frank Ocean often does not. So we were ready for that. And he did a couple songs. And people were like, oh, okay, it's like someone else going to come out. But Drake then weirdly kept being like, you know, I'm going to tell you, I'm here for you tonight. If you want me to keep going, I'll keep going.
I'm going to tell you.
Come, please.
Like I said, I'm here for you tonight. If you want to keep going,
no!
I will keep going tonight. What's up?
Frank!
If you want to keep going, I will keep going tonight.
He's going to stay.
It's been love. I love y'all. I go by the name of Drake. Thank you for having me.
It's not like it's some accordion player I've never heard of. No, it's fucking Drake.
It's Drake.
I don't get it. I still don't. I mean, I guess if they expected one thing and they realized he was the last performer, but wouldn't you have realized that at the beginning of his set? Like, who's coming on after Drake?
The problem is the allure of Frank Ocean really gets in these kids' minds. Like, the fact that he is very elusive. Nobody really knows what he's doing. He'll just drop a song and say nothing about it. Like, that is the kind of the mystique around Frank Ocean. So it was probably devastating for them to see that Drake was the one there. But the fact that they booed Drake, someone who they liked Drake.
Right. So they booed him. And some people apparently were throwing water bottles.
Yeah.
And basically the last time he was like, y'all want one more? Y'all want one more? People were like, no. And then like he was like, it's been love. And he walked off stage. And the stage went black. And then you hear people chanting, we want Frank. We want Frank. It's like, do you think he's just, like, backstage drinking chamomile?
Franklin's peeking behind a curtain, right, just waiting. Oh, they beckoned. That's not...
Shall I materialize?
The funniest thing that happened out of this was Tyler's tweets.
Hilarious.
Tyler...
All caps.
All caps. I thought bringing one of the biggest artists on the fucking planet to a music festival was fire, but flip side, a little tone deaf knowing the specific crowd it drew. Some created a narrative in their head and acted out like assholes when it didn't come true, and I don't fuck with that. This nigga did Feel No Ways. Song is beautiful. Also, mostly everyone was having a great time. Those shits in the front area were the ones being mad rude, which I can see why, but nah, fuck that. Y'all represented me and flogged to my guest and made us look so entitled and trash. There were a lot of people bopping to the music.
Yeah.
I feel like the people in the front in general admission were people who were like parked
well,
there all
the
fucking day
fans.
Thinking it was going to be Frank.
Yeah, because I saw a video once Drake got off stage and everyone was, you know, dissipating because that's it. Now the festival's over. I hope y'all are happy. There's one man screaming at the top of his lungs, like screaming Frank's name.
Yeah.
You know, those are the people Frank! Who are the most... Exactly.
like Amy Winehouse. Yeah, that album.
There was... Fuck me, Pops.
Yes. I interviewed Jackie Collins once. She said that was her favorite song in the moment. Then she soon died. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, my God. You should be stronger than me. Anyway.
That song's so problematic now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, right? Are you gay?
Are you gay?
Are you a faggot? Is that why you don't want to fuck Amy Winehouse? The song is wild. But she's dead.
What can
we say?
We've all been here 7 years longer.
He also tweeted... Okay, last tweet, I was in the front and I hear, Tyler! And I looked to my left and this girl, red face, puffy, waterfall of tears, looked into my soul and said, trembling with anger, what the fuck is this shit? Nigga, I turned away so quick, she was pissed, bro.
Bruh. Tyler is one of the... Oh, I mean, if you guys remember, Tyler had a show on Adult Swim called Loiter Squad with he and his friends. This guy is a funny guy through and through. He doesn't care. He gives no... In fact, the song, Feel No Ways. Tyler doesn't feel no ways. Drake doesn't feel no ways. Did you see what Drake posted on Instagram?
Yes. So Drake's response was peak Drake, very petty. He said, like, LOL, just signed a residency at Camp Flogna, so y'all be seeing me every year for the next 10 years.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I'm sorry he wins. I'm rooting for Drake in this situation.
He cried all the way to his $200 million jet.
Right, I bet.
Now, Twitter is ablaze with all of these funny lyrics that, like, you know, Drake is probably going to sing about this, and it's like, oh, the crowd had me full up with emotion. Just to be frank, I cried an ocean. Things like that.
Frank Ocean, my dear, doesn't give a damn.
Yeah. Frank doesn't even know this happened. He's planning the third prep party and that's it. That's really, he doesn't know. He hasn't left bed.
But really there's just this idea of booing an artist because
I'm thinking
get
of the situation in which I would actually boo an artist. Like,
never.
I heard one time when Lauryn Hill shows up 34 hours late, maybe you get a little ornery in that
34.
Situation. But honestly,
not Gina.
No.
Gina Rodriguez is in the front.
the most famous example of booing I can think of was after Sinead O'Connor ripped that picture of the Pope. Mm. She went to that tribute to Bob Dylan, where she was singing a song and got booed because she was, you know, a controversial figure at the time. But that was such a specific pop cultural insane moment.
I always imagine you boo like an artist if it's like, you know, in her drunker days, like if it was like Courtney Love or something, you know, like stumbling on stage. Like if the artist is fucking up and like not actually performing, then you're pissed and you start booing at them, right?
That one performance of Whitney totally botching I Will Always Love You that I had not seen until that documentary. That might have been boo-worthy.
I could not imagine booing an artist. Maybe one, given the event that they had different expectations, I see how that could have like gassed them up. But two, as long as somebody came out, they got dressed that morning, the DJ's there, the songs are playing. Could you imagine booing anyone?
Mm-hmm.
Halsey. Halsey.
Not for nothing. A lot of you are saying that I have swerved you or whatever, but I've been in press all day. You see that video of Halsey?
Oh, yes.
Coming out to confront her fans outside of a hotel. What's a very funny irony that our friend Royce pointed out, because he was there with me, was the fact that so many of these teens were dressed like they were in Euphoria, right?
Uh-huh.
Because that's just become, you know, the look now. Like, it blew up. And they were booing Drake. And it's like the irony lost on them that he's a producer of Euphoria.
He should have been like, do y'all want a season two, yes or no?
If he had threatened to take away season two of Euphoria, they would have shut the fuck up.
Woo! Booze would have turned to woos.
He's like Miranda Priestly in Devil Wears Prada telling Anne Hathaway, like, you picked that look from a pile of this stuff.
A pile of Zendaya stuff.
That is an iconic scene.
Oh, the best.
I love that scene so much.
I would also lastly just say that, not to put age into it, but it felt like fans who did not have a frame of reference for how disappointing Frank Ocean is. I'm like, do these people remember the period between Channel Orange and Blonde
when
that nigga was
so
annoying and played us constantly?
Month after month after month, he would play yo.
And then you remember even the release of that shit where it was like, oh, here's a video of me constructing a set, fucking like streaming loop on a computer.
Heavy breathing onto a beat.
He constantly does that shit, which is why I was not shocked that he was not there.
We have like Stockholm syndrome to Frank Ocean. He just kind of abuses us as fans. Well, I wouldn't say it's abuse. If you need to keep your art from, you know, he didn't want to release his art yet. He kept it, fine. But how do you expect consistency from somebody who's a nigga who's never been there?
And it's rudely elusive, too. It's not like he's out giving us makeup palettes like Rihanna.
Which is so nice of her.
At least she microdoses us with Fenty and books full of pictures of her.
And fashions, like showing up in Ocean's
Shows.
8.
And then again, I know we're not entitled to any artist's art. And that was the creepy part when I heard in the video when they're chanting, we want Frank.
It was so creepy.
Very cult-like. And it just reminds me that we have this very warped notion about artists and art and how we don't own performers. Performers don't owe us anything. Mm-hmm. They could drop one album and never be seen ever again. Mm-hmm. But it was just creepy.
I always say I don't trust people who only stan one thing, because that's like being in a cult.
Yeah.
You just are worshiping one thing, placing it above all else, and like that's not social. That's not any fun for anybody else around you. Yeah. And it's obviously too much of your identity. It's creepy.
Yeah. Stan multiple things.
That's right. A constellation of artists.
Mm. Orion.
Belts.
When we're back, keep it. And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode. It's Keep It.
The most vicious segment of the episode.
Lewis, what's your Keep It?
Well, as you know, I'm a Republican at heart. And so my Keep It this week goes to the lamestream media for not covering what I believe is the biggest story of the week, certainly the biggest story of my year. I went on Twitter the other day, which I consider a safe place for my emotions, as you know. And there's this tweet from the television series Wheel of Fortune. It goes like this. Our taping on Thursday was canceled because host Pat Sajak underwent successful emergency surgery to correct a blocked intestine. He is resting comfortably and looking forward to getting back to work. Taping resumed today as scheduled, and Vanna White has stepped in as host. 37 years Vanna turned your letters. And what did you give her? Nothing. Now Vanna ascends. You gave Vanna shit in 1987 when she wrote her autobiography, Vanna Speaks. You thought it was funny. Vanna doesn't speak. I don't even know what she sounds like. Well, she wrote it anyway. The next year, she tried acting, and you gave her shit for that, too. It was called Goddess of Love. She played the Goddess of Love, Venus. Who else was in it? Betsy Palmer. Who's Betsy Palmer? The mother of Jason in the Friday the 13th movies. I don't know who came up with this movie, okay? It just happened. Accept it. And 1997, you made fun of Vanna when she didn't even have to turn the letters anymore. She just started hitting buttons. Well, she hits the buttons really well, okay? Nobody would do it better. Have you hit buttons well recently? I don't think about the way you hit buttons. Vanna does it exceptionally. Now, finally, after Pat's vowels are blocked, Vanna finally gets her turn to step up and talk to contestants and be a person. I am thrilled for this. I love Vanna White. Do you know what she loves? Yarn. She sells a lot of it. Also, she deserves way more time on TV, and she's about to get it in at least one episode of Wheel of Fortune. Pat, I hope you recover well. Wish you weren't such a hardcore Republican. Vanna, this is your time. We are behind you. What an amazing name Vanna is.
Vanna White.
Vanna White. You know, I imagine a time some time ago that probably Kim Basinger would play Vanna White in a movie.
Oh, right, exactly.
Yeah.
That level of blonde. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
The era of blonde bombshells is really over. Like the Lonnie Anderson.
Well, wait till Bombshell.
It'll come back mm-hmm. after that?
Probably. Yeah.
Vanna's ascension is in step with Bombshell, I've decided.
Yeah. The Phoenix has risen.
Wow. I RSTL and need my pants when I heard this news.
Louis, who do you want as the new Vanna if Vanna comes and takes Pat's spot?
Should I just burst into tears right on... Oh, I see. Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Because we don't know who's going to be touching the letterboard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess just the human side of me wants it to be a queer person of color.
Yes.
So I guess the answer is Titus Burgess.
Great.
Who Jussie Smollett needs something to do.
Oh, that's true.
That could
He'd
be a thing.
Take the letters. They would have been
half the alphabet is missing today. What happened?
They won't let that nigga on Sesame Street.
Oh my god. Oh, my keep it. My keep it this week is a serious keep it. I'm very, very mad about this. My keep it is to T.I. and him taking his daughter to the gynecologist and insisting, his 18-year-old daughter, and insisting that he knows the information about her hymen. Every time...
Consider both sides. I'm sorry. I think you're being unreasonable.
He was recently doing an interview where he divulges information that he does, in fact, go with his daughter to her gynecologist appointments, and he makes sure that her hymen is still intact because that means she is still a virgin. Now, when I heard this immediately, I was like, why didn't these interviewers say anything? Like, hey, shut this down. This is not a conversation we can be having. They have since come out and been like, okay, yeah, we messed up. We do support women's bodies and women's health and the privacy of that. My concern is that means T.I. has coerced his 18-year-old daughter to, you know, remove the confidentiality. Because doctors ask you, they go, hey, do you want your parents to know about this? I know that I didn't want my mom to know that I was getting pregnancy tests at 18. So maybe this woman should not have to divulge this information. Certainly she shouldn't have to divulge this information to her father. And the audacity and the black paternalism of it all, it's too hyped up. It's too much. And honestly, I know for a fact T.I. is not checking his sons. He's not swabbing his sons every night to be like, you're not having sex, right? You're good. This is all good. So it's just misogynistic and disgusting. And I wish T.I. would stop checking his daughter's hymen.
Well, also, by the way, it's not just that this is occurring. It's that he's telling the media about this.
Right.
Yes,
so it's
he's
like
proud
clearly,
of
yeah, clearly, yeah, something he thinks is normal and
his
admirable.
His self-help book
yeah.
is coming. You
and
know, how to
ignorance.
Check your daughter's hymen.
Ugh, that's so vile.
And other stories. So my keep it this week is to the entire book tour for Triggered.
Dun, dun, dun.
By Donald Trump Jr.
Which is technically a book.
Yes.
He has written down words, and I think there's binding, but I don't know that I would still call it a book.
I don't think Lenny from Of Mice and Men wrote anything, but I think... but somebody ghost wrote this book called Triggered, and he has been on a book tour, not by himself. He's been on a book tour with his girlfriend, Kimberly Guilfoyle, who... Let's just jump into Kimberly Guilfoyle for a minute. I am utterly fascinated by this woman
right.
who is formerly the assistant district attorney of San Francisco and then became the first lady of San Francisco when she married Gavin Newsom and then joined Fox News and then had some other marriage and is now dating Don Jr., who is not yet divorced from his wife, who he got engaged to in a mall in New Jersey.
Wow. I actually did not know any of that.
Yes.
Also, the only thing that Gavin Newsom and Donald Trump Jr. have in common is an Uzi pomade.
Have you ever seen the photo of Gavin and Kimberly lying on a rug?
Oh, God,
it's no. like a dramatic, soapy, just like goofy photo.
I'm going to say, they're... Don Trump Jr.'s hair and Gavin Newsom's hair, it's both like Anne Rice would be like, it's a little bit vampiric, don't you think?
Yeah. So anyway, they've been on this book tour together. They recently did a talk at UCLA, which was hosted by Charlie Kirk from Turning Point USA, mm-hmm. America's number one organization.
Ranked just below the E! News ticker in terms of relevance to the news.
And factual information.
And he was heckled and booed during his speech, but it was not by liberals, as he assumed, because anytime a conservative gets heckled on stage, it has to be liberals who want to shut down free speech, mm-hmm. right? No, it was actually creepier right-wing fans of his father who are pro shutting down borders and think that Turning Point USA is too nice to Israel.
Oh, my God. Brilliant, beautiful people inside and out.
Yes. So they heckled Don Jr., and he was like, oh, it's the liberals, it's the liberals. He thought it was the liberals, but it wasn't. And they yelled at him because they shut down a Q&A that was supposed to be happening.
Mm-hmm.
And as the shouting got too loud, Kimberly defended Don Jr.
with what sounds almost like prepared, quote-unquote,
right.
quips.
Yes, prepared quips. She shouted, you're not making your parents proud by being rude and disruptive and discourteous. We're happy to answer a question. Respect the people around you so that they can hear. Let me tell you something. I bet you engage and go on online dating because you're impressing no one here to get a date in person. What?
Which words and in what order? What? Like, that sentence.
None of it was intelligent.
Enigmatic.
The
refrigerator magnets. They're in the wrong order.
That makes more sense to
yeah.
me.
The idea that you are booing Don Jr. and his girlfriend because that is you looking for a date.
Right.
The fact that she is then denigrating online dating and relating it to people who boo at speeches. I don't know what's going through this woman's head.
She knows somebody who's dating somebody he met online and she hates him?
Yes.
It's about knowing one person who had an online dating experience she remembered. That's what that's about.
And this is, of course, right after their disastrous book tour appearance on The View, where they were screaming at Whoopi Goldberg. And
yeah, I believe Joy Behar headbutted him. That's right.
Yeah. And Don brought up the fact that, you know, Joy Behar, you wore blackface once. And Whoopi was like, she didn't wear blackface. I'm black. I can tell that's not blackface. And then he was like, well, you said that Roman Polanski's rape wasn't rape.
I love the wiki search he did on there's gaffes from the past. Also,
who needs Oppo research before you go on The View?
When he said the blackface thing, was he talking about Whoopi Goldberg and Ted Danson? That do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I think Joy. He was talking about a different incident with Joy in some sort of costume, but he could have brought up blackface with Ted Danson.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. In case anybody doesn't know what that is, there was like some sort of...
It was a roast.
And Ted Danson appeared at it in blackface as he was dating Whoopi Goldberg at the time as part of a joke they were telling. Anyway, it's a very strange, bizarre moment in pop culture history.
I mean, just even thinking about the pre-Steenburgen era of Ted Danson dating Whoopi Goldberg.
No, 1990 was a wild time, guys.
Everyone dated.
Vanilla Ice was in the air.
Yes, of course. Anyway, I'm just utterly fascinated by this book tour for a book that I'm sure he did not write, that I'm sure his father has not read,
right?
That his girlfriend is accompanying him on.
Yeah.
Why is she on the book tour with him? I have so many questions.
Right. She seems to be doing his dirty work for him.
Yeah.
You know, like doing the screaming that he doesn't want to do.
Right. Because she's also like a legal analyst, you know, because she was the ADA. And I remember when he tweeted last week, too, he was confronted about this on The View. He tweeted out the whistleblower's name. And he justified it because it was already on the Drudge Report. And there was a quote about how she left the room and came back and was like, oh, well, what did you do while Mamacita was gone?
Oh, help me.
These people are the gross Republican version of Morticia and Gomez.
And do not besmirch their names. Those are very important people to me.
Gross Republican versions.
Yeah.
You know, like actual scary versions.
Right, right.
The Munsters.
Right. Yeah, they're
the Munsters.
Getting that funeral home check.
Anyway, I feel like this is my penance for being so into Omarosa's book tour.
Right, right.
That now I'm suffering through this.
That he could write a book that doesn't come with an 8-pack of crayons is just mind-blowing.
He's also not a politician.
Right, not yet.
Well, I don't think that will ever happen.
All right. Well, your lips to God's ears.
All right. Anyway, that's our show this week.
Woo, dynamic.
Yes. thanks again to Hunter Harris for being here. And join us next week where neither of us will remember Art Pop either. Keep It is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Rustin is our producer. It's Caroline, like the princess, the one you don't care about. Our editor is Bill Lance, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn and Nadine Melkonian, for filming and editing our video content every week.